Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
I'm Peter.
Ross delayed too long.
Did it? I didn't delay on my end.
So it's Ross and Peter. Yeah, it was right over. You guys stepped.
Sorry.
He was right at the same time. No, you didn't do anything
wrong.
Maybe
I was supposed to go second after he waited.
You did. Everything fine.
Is our feed
we are
somewhat
recording,
normal
so that's good.
Right now?
Yeah, mostly.
Okay.
I don't have any weird feed issues, and we didn't go to YouTube Live tonight again. So somebody's getting a customer service email later.
Dear
that's
YouTube,
one of the features we're
paying stop
for.
Fucking up. Well, not YouTube.
Oh, it's not YouTube. It's the
Riverside.
The
dear
software
Riverside.
That we're using.
Yeah, dear Riverside.
Yeah.
Stop fucking
up. I wasn't going to call them out by name yet until I actually talked to the customer service team, just in case. So I won't piss them off. Anyway, welcome
right
to the show.
To, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Tonight, we're always socially distanced. It's the only way we've ever done the podcast. Ross is way in the Eastern time zone. You actually are like Eastern time zone proper. You're not like Ohio.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's a dig to my Ohio relatives. Yeah. I'm in the Midwest and Peter's in Colorado. So we're back to our East Central Mountain time zones again. It's like it's not quite back to back show. Typically, Peter, we're East Coast Central time zone, and then we've got somebody way out on the West Coast who joins us.
Yeah.
Speaking of Eastern time zone, Ross, you have a trip coming up.
I do have a trip coming up. I think we might have briefly touched on this, but we are going back to the Jericho Mountain, Mount Washington area in New Hampshire.
Okay.
This comes out the same week that I will be there. So, yeah, we are.
Perfect. So if you're in the area, start looking for Ross right now if you're hearing this.
If you're hearing this, yeah, start stalking. We're going
to. I was going to say, start looking for a bright blue Polaris quad.
Yeah.
With
and,
neon highlighter accents.
Yeah. Actually, not uncommon in that area, but I Tundra TRD Pro also is going to
be with you
chariot for the adventure. And it's just about the same drive that I did with the Raptor R earlier this year, even though one state west. So
I
yeah, stay
bet
tuned.
Your fuel mileage is better.
I am willing to bet because there's more altitude. The roads to New Hampshire have more elevation and more, you know, in the way of like actual stuff to drive over, surprisingly. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Isn't this turboed?
It is a twin turbo V6 with a hybrid assist, but again, Toyota says that it's for power, not for fuel mileage. So yes, I expect it to be better than the supercharged, you know, V8 Raptor R, but it'll be interesting because it's going to be hauling the exact same quad with the exact same amount of shit that I put on board. And yeah,
I'm sorry, you're mentioning science.
Maths.
Yeah, like that's a real experiment. Exact same load, exact same.
Yep.
I mean, pretty much the same location in the country.
It's almost the same mileage too. So
sweet.
Should be interesting. Yeah.
Good test.
So that's coming up. What else has been going on in my world? I've been driving the BMW X1, which is
a thing
of almost no interest to this show.
It's an interest, but like
it's an extremely easy vehicle to live with. It has a few things that are absolutely infuriating. Like it doesn't have a physical button to turn off the automatic start stop. Like you have to go through the menus and then it only does it once and then you turn it off and turn it back on and reset it. But it's comfortable. We drove through like a freaking monsoon the other day and it did great, which, you know, you never know. You drive a whole bunch of different things and you drive through a proper like red and purple on the Weather Channel radar thunderstorm, and it actually it did great. So that's the BMW X1.
And did it have like the automatic wipers, or are you able to control your wiper speeds?
It had automatic wipers. So the detents on the wipers are off, auto, and then low, medium, high, or maybe just low, high. But
they don't give you like the rotating knob to adjust your intermittent.
It has the little dial for low. But the auto wipers did pretty well. They were a little overactive when it like was just spitting rain. But in the absolutely torrential downpour, it was pretty good. So yeah, car's fun. The X1 is
all-wheel drive.
Yeah, it does the job. It's a car. This one,
Yuppie Northeast winter machine.
It's more like Yuppie Northeast all year machine. You know, because it's the same. It's what people. Remember when I said like people should buy a Crosstrek and that's like the most car that they probably need?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they should get probably. This one was
the Crosstrek or
the Crosstrek. Yeah, the Crosstrek. Okay. The X1 is the nicest Crosstrek in the world. It was also
shit, seriously.
It was $47,000 for an X1.
I'm sorry?
$47,000.
That's it
for an X1?
47.
Yeah, 47.
That's like average new car price is like 45 ish, right? Like
this
47?
Is the least expensive BMW you can get into.
It's okay, but still, like, I'm shocked by that.
Yeah,
because like 10 years ago, test driving 3 series BMWs, like 320, not anything cool, but like a 325. Was $35,000. Post-pandemic, yeah. 47 for an entry-level BMW seems nuts.
I disagree. I think 47 is where like an X3 should be for a nicely equipped one, but we're not in that world. So
it's a luxury brand.
It is a luxury brand, but this shares its bones with like a Mini that also has a turbo three-cylinder engine, you know? Like
I bet that Mini's about 47 grand.
No, the Mini's probably 10 grand cheaper, the same platform, but it's a good car. It's a box checker, you know, like it has the things, like if you went on Edmunds or something, you're like, I want all wheel drive, BMW, heated seats,
four doors,
leather, four doors, and you know, CarPlay, like that's the lowest way to get into it. And it's good.
And it's German.
It's German. For better or worse, but yeah, no, it's good. It feels like a quality product. Speaking of quality product, I'm going to take a sip of my water.
Oh, big pause.
I finished the installation of the White Knuckle Off-Road Rock Sliders today.
Did you?
I did. I drove the truck. I actually took it out on a drive after completing the install. it was a process. The passenger side, so to back up for Peter, who probably has no idea what we're talking about. I have a 2018 Lexus GX 460. It's got a bunch of shit on it. And I've been working with White Knuckle Off-Road, who very, very kindly sent over some rock sliders for review and testing and whatnot. And the passenger side went on pretty easily. It took a couple hours and it was no big deal whatsoever doing it myself. The driver side, because the Lexus has KDSS, which is the kinetic dynamic suspension system thing, which is like the hydraulic, you know, cross balanced like sway bar wheel, it was extremely difficult installing it by myself on the ground, especially considering I did most of the install when it was like 95 degrees. I'd work on it for like 10 minutes and then not look at it for 2 days and then come back and spend 5 minutes trying to remember where I left off and then spending 5 minutes working on it and then not looking at it again for 2 days. And if you have a lift and you know what you're doing, it's probably very easy. but the clearances that you have to work with are very, 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 very small. They're like you can't fit like a 16th inch thick washer through some of the clearances. Like, it's tight.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like, even Stuart Little's pissed about how small that is.
Oh, man.
It's a very 1990s reference.
I just opened my mouth and I get a really inappropriate joke, but I'm going to throttle back and not. But yeah, so so the slider's done. The install's over. I'm going to drive it, beat it up, and check all the stuff to make sure it's
report
tight.
Back.
Report back. And yeah, that's.
Do you have skids life. Underneath?
I have a gas tank skid, an oil pan skid, and a front diff skid, and
okay.
Need to actually skidify the rest of it sometime soon.
The front engine one, that big one that everybody...
It has like a thing.
It has the tin? I mean the aluminum?
It's not nothing. I wouldn't bash it on much more than, you know, a paper mache rock, but that's why I take the lines that I do most of the time.
Right. So. I just couldn't remember if you actually had pieces underneath there.
There's pieces of something.
Something.
Yeah, actually, great, good. I had the gas tanks get off for the rock slider install, which, if anybody's wondering, makes it a lot easier.
Okay. So take your gas tank skid plate off. That's good consumer advice. And then put it back on right after you get the slider on.
Yeah,
definitely put that back on.
Yeah, I only broke one bolt and only need an easy out for one bolt to actually finish things, which is a win in my book.
Good. My updates this week are very minimal. We are in full youth sports season right now, so we have a JV/varsity football player, which means I now get to go to 2 football games a week because he could play in either, which is great. And then I have a 7th grader who's playing tackle football for school. And club baseball with multiple tournament weekends in a row right now. So attending 4+ baseball games in a weekend is at a minimum 4+.
With good God.
Chance how, for 5 or 6.
How far are the fields from you?
Well, the tackle football can be worse because last night, JV football was in Lawrence, which is 40 minutes west of me. So I had to actually get on a highway and drive 40 minutes out there and then obviously back. And then the baseball fields are only like 25 minutes away. But like everything for me is at least 20 minutes away. Like it's like the joke in Kansas City is like, how long does it take to get there? Like 15 to 30 minutes always, unless you're actually like cross town. And it could be an hour and you could still be in the same metro area. So I know we're not fancy LA where it like takes 4 hours to drive 3 miles. Yeah. Like I cover actual mileage in my time. But yeah. Oh, I left off one kid's got a flag football game too coming up. But yeah, it's just, we're stacked on stacked. And we're making executive decisions about like who's going to what, which kid we're going to try and stash where so they don't have to be in the heat just to be there. Like just
more kids than you got hands between the two of you.
Well, and the monkey wrench in all of it is my oldest is working now until like Sunday. We had this perfect plan. He was going to watch the little one. We were going to go watch baseball. While we were at flag football, he got called in to go ref flag football games. And so all of the like help throughout the day, it was just, we were like, all right, problem solving, like pivot, like what's next? So it's exactly what we did, and we survived. I kind of tanned, but I'm kind of a pasty white guy anyway, so you can't really tell. You can definitely tell I wore a hat all weekend.
Yeah,
very, very white forehead.
From the bicep down.
Yeah, like it's very much that baseball t-shirt tan. I don't go to the pool, so weirdly, all the pools close here after Labor Day. What? It's still crazy hot. Like
it's hot as fuck.
But they're like, nope, we shut the pools down. You're like, guys, climate's adjusted. Can we adjust our timetable on how we use the neighborhood pool?
Yeah.
Not yet. Okay. Real reason why people are here.
Right.
I started messaging Peter a long time ago because I have a 2017 Suburban and was searching for roof racks and skids and all that stuff that before where we were trying to plan that Moab trip and discovered Peter's company. So, Peter, you want to do a quick, like, elevator pitch about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so we started Baseline Overland a couple years ago. We make roof racks for Suburbans and other hard-to-outfit vehicles.
But it's a little more than roof racks, but...
Yeah, we also sell bumpers and rock sliders and suspension and other products, but we manufacture our own roof racks. So
yeah, and I'm going to give the shout-out right now that, like, if you haven't found baseline.overland on Instagram yet, go ahead and do it because there's tons of square body Suburbans on there and they're gorgeous and it's my favorite generation of truck.
They're fun.
so that's my initial shout out.
Yeah, so the initial questions, having grown up in a GM household, why'd you gravitate towards GM and you know, that division of the 4x4 world in particular? And then how did you end up deciding to make a business out of this?
So, I mean, the GM thing, I've always started with square body trucks in high school. And I've driven lots of things for work, everything from, you know, the F-150 to the Ram 2500 with the Cummins and lots of other trucks. But as our family vehicles, we have four kids, and so we have had early on Tahoes or Yukons and Suburbans or the Yukon XL because, you know, we've got to get butts and seats and fit all of our stuff. And so we've just had those, and so we worked with what we had. And, you know, going through that phase of we're not going to switch cars to something else, we won't fit in something else smaller, the 4Runners or what have you, started, you know, pounding the pavement trying to find stuff to outfit that truck, and, you know, spent countless hours searching for nothing. Just didn't exist.
You're my only result that I could find, so I'm glad you exist.
It's a
You know, a few winters ago or whatever, I built a roof rack in my garage, and kind of started building from there. And then had in that time been searching for bumpers, and there's a few bumpers that did or kind of still do exist for a Suburban, but not for the Yukon XL, which we had and still have.
Only certain years of or generations of Suburban.
Yeah, and they're enormous. I mean, they're gigantic.
Like the ranch, you know, hands. They stick, you remember out. Those?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's exactly for what sure. I was going to say. The ranch hands.
Yeah. And I grew up in the Texas Panhandle, and I have seen my share of ranch hand bumpers, and they serve a purpose for sure. They're a quality product, but they're massive. And
how much do those weigh? That's got to weigh like 500 pounds.
So heavy. And they're like, you know, I don't know ranch hands lead times, but the stuff that existed out there for those was, I mean, the lead times were crazy, and they were just so massive.
I'm seeing
and
anywhere
for
from
that, there just wasn't anything.
200 to 300 pounds.
Yeah, they're huge. You know, and you're already, I mean, Suburbans get a rap for being huge. You know, we can talk about the actual size of a Suburban, but, I mean, you don't want to add a foot to a long vehicle, you know. So in that, so we made the roof rack and had been hunting and hunting for a winch bumper, and then finally gave up. And actually on New Year's Day, it was snowy and someone slid through a red light and I hit him, and I'm like, I gotta have a bumper now, I'm not going back stock. And so I bought a Sierra bumper, which is the one you see in that truck, and modified it and cut my frame up and mounted it to my frame and made my own brackets for it and stuff, and then convinced the fabricator, the company that makes that bumper, to start building bumpers for these trucks, and convinced them there was a market for it, and that's kind of where we started. So we launched our website shortly after that, prototyped our rack, went into production, and started selling roof racks and bumpers for, you know, like one vehicle.
Fair enough.
For one vehicle, but there's like, that's so I spent some time at LMC Truck years ago, and it's like, yeah, you're building something for one model, and it was like a radiator core support that they were like diagramming up and taking measurements on, and they were like, yeah, it's gonna cost this much to make it, but like there were 850,000 of these F-350s sold, so they're like it's a very high percentage rate of failure, so they're like, we'll make our money back and like whatever amount. That's the how they did all that. But like for American trucks, like there's tons of Suburbans and there's tons of Yukon XLs, especially throughout the generations.
Yep,
they're a huge seller. I mean, the Tahoe has been one of the top selling vehicles of all times, and then you kind of cross that with the Silverado, the Sierra, the Suburban, the Tahoe, the Yukon. They're all very, very similar. There's just an enormous amount of them out there.
Avalanche.
Russ, the Avalanche. He has Avalanche stuff.
The Avalanche. I mean,
that's my all-time favorite.
So we, that's where we started. We started with one truck, and then we added the Avalanche. There was a local customer that lent us his truck. Mm-hmm. And so from there, it's, you know, fairly simple to modify to go from the Suburban. The Avalanche is the exact same platform as the Suburban. So it's just a shorter version of that rack and, you know, change the brackets. Mm-hmm. And then we went to the Tahoe, and then we went to, we went back a couple generations, and then we went forward, you know, a generation, and then we went back older generations, and then we started adding pickups in and started filling in the gaps.
Progress isn't always linear.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah.
So
yeah, I love the square body so much. I'm sorry if you're watching online. It's gonna be a lot of square body photos.
Oh yeah, they're my favorite. We bought a square body Blazer back in January, and my son drives it. And
is that the white one?
It is. Yeah, it's been a fun build. We launched a couple new bumpers. In a roof rack at the Overland Expo last month, and it's been a lot of fun.
What kind of adventures have you taken your GM trucks on?
We have been all over Colorado. We went last summer. We did a kind of a long trip and went all the way up to Glacier and everywhere in between. And we've taken that truck up into Ouray, Colorado. It's been in, you know, a lot of mountain bike races. We have camped. That's where we really kind of got into needing to set that truck up, is my kids race mountain bikes. And so you were talking about football. Mountain biking is like the Friday Night Lights of Colorado. Mm-hmm. And
that's an amazing way to describe it. That's so fun.
It's so fun. I mean, I moved here from Texas about 7 years ago, and one of my friends was a coach on one of the teams, and we went to a race when my son was in eighth grade, and I just was blown away. It's phenomenal. I mean, you would have, 1,500 kids racing on a weekend at a venue, and it's everybody. You've got, you know, all ages, all sizes, mm-hmm. boys and girls, and all, you know, from kids that are starting out to kids that are racing internationally, winning nationals. I mean, you've got elite athletes, and everybody's just racing and just having fun. And there's everybody's got their tent set up, and their kind of pit area, and it's just a blast. So we would travel to all those races and camp, and that's really what got us into a lot of that, and just trying to dial in our setup so we could really break down camp faster.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because you got to be at a venue at 7 or 8 in the morning, and, you know, getting up and getting everybody gone. What's the trick?
What's the trope? Like, less downtime means more uptime. Like the stupid tech thing, you know.
Yeah, setting up camp to me is leisure. You know, getting everybody back in the car is
the worst.
The challenge.
Yeah. Like, the absolute worst.
So what is actually in your personal fleet these days?
We still have our 2007 Yukon XL Denali that we started with. That was sort of the impetus that started everything, and we've been building that and are still, you know, I don't know if you ever stop working on projects.
Nope.
And so that's still our family rig, and we, like I said, back in January, we picked up this Blazer and have started building that, and mm-hmm. now we're going to take a long break. So we've been getting ready for Expo and doing all that stuff, and now we're enjoying it, and yeah, that's our two kind of fleet vehicles.
Okay.
So.
Okay. What are some of the most interesting vehicles you've worked on?
Gosh, I mean, I think we did a while back a Hodson Motors. We saw that they were going to be doing this square body Suburban build, mm-hmm. and that was, we were really heavily in the Suburbans. And I reached out and said, I want to be a part. I'm going to be a part. I'm, you know, building a roof rack for this. And so they were great. We supplied them with a KC light bar and a roof rack, and they put that on their giveaway truck, and it was a super cool come and swapped.
That's awesome.
Suburban on, you know, with Dana 60s and 37s.
Oh,
and it's a super cool truck.
That's a dream truck.
And yeah, it was awesome. And so that was super fun. We have done, like I said, everything from avalanches to there's some really cool Tahoes out there that we've mm-hmm. got to be a part of. Probably my favorite truck, maybe of all time, David Oliver with Willamette Motor and Fab has probably the best built Suburban out there. And we got to put a roof rack on his, and they just did the BDR trail back this early, mm-hmm. right before the first of the summer, for power stop brakes. And then,
cool.
So being on that truck, it's just an insane build. If you get into the weeds of what he's done with that truck, it's super fun. So
you got a dream platform you want to work on, like a quadrasteer or something quirky like that?
It's all fun. Like the funnest part for me is there's a lot of people in that community that are passionate about their trucks,
mm-hmm.
and they love a GMT 800 or they love the GMT 400 or whatever generation. They're just like, it's, you know, it's their baby. They work on it. They love it. And, we get to show up and say, hey, we can help you with that, and we actually make some products for that now. Mm-hmm. And you know, they've been in the same boat we were in, searching and searching and not finding anything. And so we find a lot of people that are super grateful and super pumped that, you know, we make stuff for trucks, which maybe doesn't make the most financial sense, but it's really fun to be a part of.
Have, speaking of not making the most financial sense, have you seen any interest on the newer iterations of Tahoe and Suburban, like the 1XX GMT? Is it T1XX platforms?
So like the 21 and up,
yeah,
newer generation. The K2 generation was the 15 K2, to 20.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we started making those a little while back, and we've been going with those. We have had a lot of people reach out and asking if we are going to do the newer ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes. We're currently waiting on GM to send us the scan files of those, working with SEMA to get those. And that should be coming very soon. As far as like being a, you know, true off-roader, I don't know. They're, you know, they're all, you know, independent front and rear suspension vehicles. But they're super cool, and they're practical for, you know, family stuff. And if you need a roof rack, put your bikes and your skis and your rooftop tent for kind of whatever, you know, we're there for it. So just waiting on those, will be coming up pretty soon. So that's really the last of the GM gap that we have. So we've filled in everything from 1973 up to 2024 in the trucks and SUVs, other than that generation of SUV. So, including the midsize, we went back and did the Colorados, the first and second gen Colorados and the third gen Colorado. Mm-hmm. And so everything except the S10, the old S10, we don't have
Blazers and
that yet, but.
And S10 pickups.
Yep.
You think it's such a weird space that everything is in right now with the new trucks, because, you know, the full size stuff is so expensive. Even used, you know, CPO, like a 3 or 4 year old truck is still just out of reach for most people. So we have like the midsize stuff coming in, and you see any, what do you think the future of the third gen Colorado and Canyon is? You think it's going to be like a runaway like Toyota's had with the Tacomas, or is this just another like GM diehards going for something less expensive?
I mean, I think that fits a market. I mean, I've talked to people, especially, I mean, I think, you know, you talk fuel mileage and you talk, you know, kind of some economy, you know, initial purchase price, you know, and less weight and more compact. I mean, they're good vehicles. You know, we'll see how the new one does. I mean, I think, you know, this space is, you know, GM sells a ton of vehicles overall, but they're, you know, they're not the top tier of the off-road market. So, you know, for us, you know, that's the reason that stuff doesn't exist out there, is because there's not a huge market for it. Mm-hmm. I think that could shift. I think people are starting to see that it matters, and they're catering to that customer base more. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a great platform. I know people that love the little baby Duramax trucks. They just get killer mileage.
The 2.8.
They have tons of power.
Dude,
I mean,
I think my favorite engine, it's not the, you know, the baby Max, like the 2.8 that was in the Colorado and Canyon, but the 3-liter Duramax, I think, is probably my favorite engine in the last 10 years.
It's a great platform to run on. You know, it's not as fast as the 6.2 or whatever, but I mean, the mileage is great. You know, you can tow with them still. They're, you know, and then you put them in a small truck and they do awesome.
Mm-hmm. How, so talking about diesels and trucks, how do you feel about the Duramax swaps? They're, I forget which company it was, but they're doing the 6.6 swaps into, I think it was LBZs going into GMT 800 Suburbans was, and the Avalanches was what they were, you know, known for.
Yeah. The Duraburb group. Duraburb. And, there's a couple of companies that do those, swaps, you know, for their customers, and they buy donors and they buy trucks and they build and sell and they do custom builds. And, I mean, there's a huge, I mean, I'd say huge,
relatively,
but everything as far as like the amount, the intensity around those is huge. Rabid. And so the people that are in that world love them. And I mean, it's, you're dropping a lot of cash. So it's not an easy thing to do to swap. You got a lot of electrical things, a lot of fuel things. You got to work through to do a diesel swap in those. Mm. But the Duramax swap Suburban is, I mean,
holy grail.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah. You take an 8.1 out and you put a 6.6 in. It's, that's it. That's
you might have a fight on your hand if you tell some people to take their 8.1 out, but but you mean the six liter, I mean, the 2500 Suburban is a beast. And then you put a Duramax in it and it's, you know, it's a bulletproof, truck that'll tow, you know, whatever you put behind it and fit your whole family and all your gear. And, you know, it's fairly compact for what it is.
Chris has a picture up with the actual 2500 LTZ wheels on a, a, what looks like it started life as a Suburban and now is a GMC Sierra 2500 front clip on it.
The heavy duty front clip of the Sierra on there. Yep.
The 8.1 was the first time that I ever heard somebody say the phrase passes everything but a gas station.
Yeah.
It's like, oh. My Avalanche, I had a 1500 and it got like 13 to 14 miles per gallon average. And you know, the guys in the Avalanche club were saying their 8.1s were getting like 8 to 11. It's like,
okay. You know, there's a lot of diehard 8.1 guys that love the torque. And they love the 8.1 as a bulletproof kind of low compression engine. And I think they're probably right. I don't know that it's the be all end all, but you know, we'll see. I think we'll probably see a lot of like the LT8 swaps coming with the 6.6. If you want to stay with the gas, it's a killer platform. So
if you had to step outside GM, what would you do? Where'd you go?
I know GM. I'm not a diehard, you know, GM is the only best thing out there. I really love, you know, what people are doing out there with their trucks. We just got back, went a local car show last weekend and took the trucks out there, and there's, you know, everything out there. You've got imports and you've got plastics and all of these, you know, cars and trucks and people building stuff. And, we're for that. I mean, we love it. And so I'm, you know, I realize that people have their things. Everything's going to break down on you at some point. You know, everything's going to have its pluses and minuses. And, you know, I really kind of like the old Ram, stuff is kind of where I'm thinking.
Like early 2000s type stuff or like,
yeah,
way back, like first Cummins square body.
Well, I mean, I love those old first gen Cummins. They're cool trucks. But you know, like the early 2000s, the mid 2000s, later. You know, I drove a 2016 Cummins for 4 years, and we took that thing on some crazy trails, and with the 8 foot bed, I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, but a real Cummins, you know, they're not the the 3 liter.
No, yeah, the big one. So I don't know. I kind of like staying in that niche of stuff that doesn't make sense to make stuff for because there's not a market for it.
I mean, we're talking about full size stuff too. Like there are literal physical limitations, you know. And you're in Colorado. Oh, totally. You have the luxury of space. You know, the trails out here in the Northeast. I mean, I've seen, you know, some full size trucks on the trail, and it's they're doing the body shop guys favors. Leave it at that.
I've certainly been in my share of places in full-size trucks, including that Ram, and including the Suburban, where you're just jammed in there, and you know,
look at the trail, look at the freaking trail rash on the 20 foot.
Yeah,
so much,
man.
It'll buff out.
Rhino liner. Yeah.
So. yeah, I mean, the full size thing is they're big, they're heavy. They're not for everything for sure.
What do you run in suspension wise on your Yukon?
We run Icon on ours. We've been using them for a while. We've been a dealer for them. I think they make a good product. And
how often are you rebuilding those?
My first set, I ran for about a year. We went with, you know, started with a kind of a basic coilover, just a single body kind of coilover shock, and went, lost a seal in those after about 10 months, I think.
Wow. How many miles, roughly?
Gosh, I mean, we put tons of miles on our trucks. he's
probably like me, where all of a sudden he goes through a year and he's like, how'd we put 40,000 miles on a vehicle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got, I think, probably almost 270,000 on that truck.
Okay, I'm catching you. I'm at 185, so I'll be right there soon.
Yeah, you'll be right there.
That's like my past life. I used to do 35, yeah, 40 a year. Thankfully,
that one shock, it started leaking after probably 12 or 15,000 miles.
Okay.
And
you run like Delta joints, like the Icon Deltas on that?
I had started with a Cognito upper control arm before I put those on. I would go back and do it differently and do the Delta joint if I was starting over.
Hindsight, 20.
But it's not bad. I mean, it at all. I don't like regret it. And we're running Kryptonite ball joints, which is the nice thing about those is you can just pop them out and pop them in, and not that you need to, but
did I spy that you're running those Goodyear Territory MTs?
I am. Yeah.
Why?
I picked them up for like $800.
What did they come off of? They come off of a Bronco, or
were a Bronco pull off. Yeah.
Uh huh. It's either a Bronco or a ZR2, you know, or an AT4. How do you feel about?
I haven't had them on very long. I like that they're, I mean, this is probably an unpopular opinion, but I like that they're like a C-rated tire. They don't beat me to death.
Okay.
And they're lightweight, so you have a lot less unsprung mass with them. Those two things I do like. I've noticed the tread is pretty soft, and so the edges are starting to
get a little chunky,
move a little bit more than I would like. I don't love that they're not a three peak snow rated tire, which we're coming up on winter. I don't know if that's just a testing thing they haven't gone through yet, or if they're just not there. So we'll see how they do and kind of the ice and snow coming up here in a month or two.
Well, I think that could be wrong. Somebody call me out if I'm wrong, but the Duratrack wasn't three big M&S rated, and far and beyond the best tire I've ever run in the snow was Duratrack. So, you know, for what it's worth, like,
yeah,
that might not mean anything.
They're soft, you know, and they have some okay siping in them. So we'll see. I think they'll probably do fine.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's, you know, I tend to toward an all-terrain tire more than a more aggressive tire.
Yeah.
Just because we have, you know, so much snow on the roads and we're spending tons of time on the highway, you know, to be honest. So
what altitude are you at?
Here in town, we're, you know, about 5,300 feet.
Okay.
You know, we can get up to 7,000 here just leaving town.
Just blinking.
Quick. Yeah. So, which is nice. You know, the other day it was like 95 degrees outside, and then you just drive like half an hour and it's 70 degrees. It's great.
Yeah. Like, what's up, Idaho Springs? Like, I'll just pop up here for a second.
Yeah. I'll just go up there, hang out till the sun starts going down, and I'll go home and. Yeah.
What'd you say, Russ?
Highest point in Connecticut is 2454.
Oh, well, that's
I will say, too. Having, you know, altitude is not horsepower's friend always. So probably, I guess it was a year, 2 years ago, we were up in Ouray and we were up above the tree line and went over a little peak on the trail going downhill and quickly realized it had like washed out and we're like, we are not driving through that. And
surprise,
could not back up that trail. I mean, it was super steep and, you know, reverse is not geared great. And
nope.
I mean, you just have no oxygen and that thing would not back up. And that's the thing I don't love about the Denali was that generation did not have selectable two-speed transfer case. It's all time, all-wheel drive.
Yeah,
I feel like you and could so pull one get out tire of a junkyard and chuck it in there.
Yeah, so that's our next project. We'll do a manual two-speed swap here coming up is our next project on that truck.
Just
so
cannibalize a Z71 Suburban and it'll be good to go.
Yeah, I looked into that. It's not that easy. But
I'm totally armchairing it right here. Like, let's not
It should be, but it's not that the Denali didn't have. It has no electronics. So the all-wheel drive is all-time all-wheel drive. There's no wire.
Totally mechanical. That's interesting.
For it. So that's why the manual swap is probably in the future because it doesn't talk to anything and you can just shift it and go. So that's probably the route we're going, but yeah, altitude is nice sometimes and other times it's not your friend.
Yeah.
What do you have under the hood? Because on your fuel door you have high octane only, and I think I saw a 525 horsepower number.
Yeah, so the Denali's, they've always recommended high octane for that truck. It had the L92, which was the
6 liter
truck version of the LS3 6.2 liter.
Oh,
6.2, yeah.
It was the same thing in the Camaro and the Corvette in that generation. And as we got up, you know, approaching 250K, we knew that truck wasn't going to go a whole lot longer. So started planning on swapping that motor, and we swapped it out here this winter and put a Chevrolet Performance 376.
Okay.
525 horsepower, 6.2 in it. So.
Okay. Right,
but doesn't work in reverse.
It will go in reverse now.
Okay, now it will.
It's got a, I mean, it's honestly, to be honest, it's not the right engine for that truck. We actually had purchased or ordered a smaller cam version of that motor, but they're just impossible to get. They run them in it in all the race trucks and everybody's running them in the resto mods and everything else, and you cannot get them, and they pushed our order back and ultimately ended up canceling our order, and they changed vent or the serial whatever model numbers of those motors, and So we found a 525 at a dealership and bought it and went with that. So
just ran away with it. You're like, I need an engine.
Yeah. we had gone to Texas and we were coming back and it had started knocking and I parked it. And we had decided beforehand, we knew that when we swapped that motor, we were going to rebuild the old one and put it in the Blazer. And so I didn't want to, you know, ruin something. So we parked it, and that's why I just was like, when I found one, I bought it. It's too big of a cam for that truck for trails and low RPM, but it's super fun.
That's still a cool swap. So yeah.
Well, sweet. We are coming up on Ross is going to turn into a pumpkin time because since he's on the East Coast.
Pumpkin.
Hey, how's that hurricane looking?
I haven't looked in like 12 hours. Is it not good?
Did I just reinitiate
one trajectory pointed it like up towards, you know, New Hampshire and Maine, which is where I'm going to be in 12 days. So
yeah, it's got more of a curve out though. I think you'll be all right.
But, yeah.
You'll probably get rain, but
I like rain
and it'll be there by this weekend.
I don't have to water my shit if it rains or wash my truck.
Yeah. It looks like it'll be in Maine by the week before you get up there.
Beautiful.
So our condolences to everybody in Maine who already went through a hurricane. So
yeah, Nova Scotia.
By the time this comes out.
Fucking blasted.
Yeah. That's so Peter, for reference, I spent 3 years down in Florida forever ago, but I have this weird thing where I still track, like I grew up in the Midwest, I still track the hurricanes. Like they're not going to come get me, but I want to know where they are.
We're weather obsessed in my household. I'm weather obsessed. My dad and my brother are weather obsessed, and I don't know. I minored in geology, which half of it was weather and environmental based. So.
Do you want the same joke? I think it'd be two shows in a row. Geology is not a real science. Do you want? No, you don't. Okay. He's so frustrated with that one.
Measure and observe. I mean, you can right, measure exactly. And observe.
No, it's a Big Bang Theory reference where the physicists are like, geology is not a real science. So that's just bringing back old CBS shows now from probably the same time as in Florida.
Yeah, that show was a cancer. That's
a long time ago.
Society.
Sweet. I will wrap up the show. You can rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening to it. You can like and subscribe on YouTube. This one didn't go live tonight again. I'm going to send an email to some people because that's messed up. You can follow Peter. It's at baseline.overland on Instagram. I've stopped using Facebook. I hate it so much. You know what I like Facebook for? I like looking at marketplace ads of Suburbans is what I like doing. So.
Yep.
Actually, you're much closer to Idaho. I got one to send to you. So,
oh, no. Not that one.
Why not?
I mean.
No, it was a good one with the colors and the.
Yeah. The one from.
It's OBS, too.
Was that last week only?
When we did that?
Ago? Yeah.
That's like 3 or 4 weeks ago, but that's like a month
it's
ago now.
It's still there?
No, I haven't checked if it's still there or not. So I'm sure somebody thought by now it was way too cheap.
Something's wrong. Fucking run if it is still there.
Yeah. Ross is No Not Like the one from Friends, and I'm at Overlean Dad, and we did a show again. Thank you so much for joining us, Peter.
Cool. Thanks,
Peter. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm going to send you an email later with so many more Suburban questions that we did not discuss in the show.
Boy.
Yeah.
But they're very specific, and not everybody wants to get all that. So
we love Suburbans, so bring it our way.
Definitely.